south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, so I checked my spam box. You know, you have to do that once in a while. And you know, it used to be a good excuse if you didn't get back to someone right away. How many times have you heard this one? Oh, I'm sorry, didn't see your message. Must have went into the spam box. Yeah, that excuse worked for a while, right? Because, you know, if someone sends you a message and you don't get back to them within a couple hours, people feel slighted. They think you demoted them to the B list, especially if you're using anti-social media a lot, like Facebook and Instacrap. So check your spam folders once in a while. Well, I just did this morning, and I found out I'm no longer popular with exiled Nigerian princes. Haven't had an email from one of those guys in a couple of weeks now. Though I did find a couple of long-lost emails concerning the Libra, you know, that fake book cryptocurrency. I guess by now everybody knows about that. In fact, every time you flick onto your computer to check out some news site, there is that very strange-looking mug of that man-boy, Mark Zuckerturd. Oops, did I just mispronounce that? Poop will happen, huh? Man, talk about a face that only a mother could love, or... that's asking to be slapped. He's got that kind of face that always looks guilty, doesn't he? Like a guy denying he's got a timeshare on Epstein Island. Speaking of timeshares, one of the world's worst investments. There are exceptions. There's always exceptions. You know, they are going great guns here in Latin America, especially Mexico, where it seems every Latino with a decent line of credit is always trying to prove to his neighbor that he's moving on up. That's why timeshares are so popular. But now you know, the latest thing in timeshares, like the one that just hit my spam folder, is, get this, private jet timeshares. You know, those things are expensive, like 5 to 10 million for a new Learjet. And you know, in that case, a timeshare seems to be a good idea. Because those things sit idle in hangars something like 95% of the time, or at least they did, until someone came up with a timeshare idea. So, yep, you could buy a week, 2 weeks, even a month, and bragging rights to your own private jet. Like the average traveler could afford that. And the advantages are not just bragging rights. It is an excellent idea. People who travel a lot for business and fly business and first class quite a bit spend tons of money if you add it up. I know on long distance flights anyway, you could pay two or three times as much for first class or business than a coach seat. And even if you fly first class and pay that extra dough, you still have to stand in sweaty lines with screaming kids and get the TSA pat downs and proctals. Now, the cool thing is, when you fly on a private jet, you go to a different part of the airport altogether. It's very low-key, no crowds, no lines, and you even get free parking right in that terminal. Oh, and there's no connecting flights. You're flying direct all the time, and there's no airport layovers, therefore no airport food or skanky, smelly, cattle call airport restrooms. The seats are wide and comfortable, and there'll be no Slavic guy with bad teeth reeking of cigarettes sharing an armrest with you like I had on my last flight. Oh, and there's no baggage constraints or weight limits either. By the way, have you ever flown on a private jet? Well, I'll tell you, on takeoff, it's a little bit scary. I did it once, and it was fun. It was an invite I didn't pay. Speaking of Learjets, you know, not all private jets are Learjets. That's just a generic name, like Kleenex is for tissue. All right, now for today's fun fact. Do you know how Lear made his money initially, before the jet? Well, for you people who actually lived in the dinosaur rock era, you remember those 8-track tape players? Man, back then, if you had a car, those things were the soundtrack to people's lives. They had miles of recording tape in them, tons of moving parts, so they broke down all the time, but they were good enough and all we had. And everyone knew if you weren't careful, they'd eat the tape. And you know, boomers today can't believe they call it classic rock. I mean, back then, in the day, if someone were to tell you what you're listening to is going to be called classic rock in the future, you'd have said, shut up and have another hit and pass the ripple. Yep, classic rock. It somehow cheapens the word classic, doesn't it? Even here in Latin America, every major market has an English classic rock station, if you can believe that. You'll know it when you first arrive at an airport in a big city. It's almost a guarantee the first Uber you take that the driver most likely, seeing you're a gringo, will tune it in. I can't tell you how many times I've secretly died inside an Uber, listening to Rod Stewart, Michael Bolton, or Air Supply. Of course, it's infinitely better than listening to Daddy Yankee or Pitbull. But then again, there's that poisonous secondary effect of hearing a Bee Gees song and not being able to get it out of your head. Shouldn't there be an app for that? Hey, now, there's an idea. Yeah, right. Michael Bolton, the Bee Gees. And yet they have the nerve to call even that crap classic rock. But I digress. Actually, that last few minutes was an experiment in digression. For your information, I just won a bet, a dare, regarding how many coherent digressions I could fit into the first 3 minutes of the show. You know, I started off this rant by saying, check your spam folder. Why? Well, for example, here's an email I got stuck in my spam folder that should be of interest to a lot of you. He says, Johnny, I'm just a few months away now from coming down to Latin America. I've listened to all your archive podcasts, paying special attention to the business success stories. Though I can't help but have a healthy dose of skepticism, however. Can it really be that easy for gringos? One of my main goals of coming down is for business opportunities, and one thing I don't remember you talking much about were business failure stories. I know you mentioned a few, and maybe my memory fails or just has a bias toward hearing what I want to hear. I don't know. So my question is, do you have examples of people who should have succeeded but didn't, rather than people who shouldn't have succeeded but did? You know, like someone who came down with a good financial cushion, worked hard and still failed in business, ended up broke and had to go back to the U.S.? Obviously, this is definitely what I want to avoid. Anyway, I'm looking forward to coming down soon and hope to meet up with you, buy you coffee, dinner, lunch, a drink, whatever. Thanks. Signed, Paul. All right, Paul, good question. Before we get started on that, why don't people offer me a free trip or a free room at the Panama Hard Rock Hotel? It's always, Johnny, I'll buy you a lunch or a cup of coffee. Oh, well, I guess it's the thought that counts, right? All right, Paul, then let's get to your question. Now, you hear me talk all the time about the gringo advantage and how it's alive and well, except when you're well on the gringo tourist trail or very near to the gringo tourist trail, because then your competition is going to be gringos, and that's the worst kind of competition to have. Now, the best business move, of course, is to have an individual niche that needs filling and no one's filled yet. Then you'll clean up. But most times, a gringo has a business idea, and there's going to be competition, though you want it to be Latino. That's where your gringo advantage will really shine. All right, let's talk about failed gringos and failed gringo business ideas. How about first, let's talk about mine. You know, throughout the years, I've had at least 13 different businesses. Some lost money, some broke even, and a few, whoa. Well, first business I had was in Costa Rica, right across from the international airport, Juan Santa Maria Airport. The first U-storage business in all of Latin America. And guess what? It didn't fail me, but my business partner did. He was a Canadian. One day, I was in my lawyer's office, and he said, Johnny, I think you ought to know that the 6 months you're in the country watching the thing, it's always making more money than when your partner's watching it for his 6 months. Now, you see, my Costa Rican lawyer also had an accountant working with him in the office, so they could see what was going on with the books. Anyway, he was telling me that my Canadian partner, you know, those Canadians are supposed to be so kind, generous, and honest and nice, but he was dipping in the till and ripping me off because it was that kind of business that was almost all cash. Hey, now, that's the way to go, huh? But it also invites temptation. So on the good advice of my lawyer, who told me not to accuse him of anything, play cool and just tell him you're leaving the country and you want him to buy you out. And that's exactly how I got out of it. I sold out for what I had in it, so it was not a net win for me. I lost something like 2 years in time and effort. So the business wasn't a failure, but I was a failure at picking my partners. Next, I was partner in a bar and restaurant in Antigua, Guatemala. Had a partner who was half Belgian, half Canadian again. The guy turned out to be a liar. We were supposed to put up the front money equally. As expenses and bills came in, we'd each come up with half of that amount, whatever it was. And as we were closing in on the home stretch, he ran out of money. Went back to Canada to sell his Harley in the wintertime. Impossible. And I caught him in a few more lies along the way. Little white lies and a couple of big ones too. I know, everyone lies once in a while. Though some lies are universal and quite acceptable, like the one you tell your grandma when she comes back from the hairdresser. And then there's the fact that women of most all cultures lie about their age and their weight, and guys lie about their sexual conquests and income. But this guy was a chronic fibber. So how did I meet this guy and even trust him enough to start a business with him? Well, he was one of the guys in my outdoor in the park Spanish class. So I was with the guy in the morning for something like 2 months, 3 or 4 hours a day. You get to talking about your life, and he told me that he ran a very successful bar and kind of hard rock cafe in Belgium. He was the manager and administrator, and he said his great dream was to open up a similar place in Antigua, Guatemala. But he couldn't do it alone. He needed a partner. So voila. Enter clueless gringo Johnny. Little did I know, most of the story he was feeding me was bullshit. And when the bar was almost complete and he ran out of money, I had had enough of his lies. So I definitely knew I didn't want to be in business with this guy, so I sold my half out 2 weeks before the bar even opened. Made my money back, just broke even, but lost all the time and effort. Same story as Costa Rica. The sad thing was, it opened and within 2 or 3 months, it was the hottest bar and disco / restaurant in all Antigua, Guatemala. It was raking in the dough. And I was so pissed off I didn't get to enjoy the spoils at all that it soured me on Guatemala for a long, long time. And I left the country for more than 10 years. I ended up in Panama, Colombia, Honduras, and a couple of other very nice choice places, which in the end turned out very good for me. You know what the Chinese say, when one door closes, two more open up. You just have to decide which one to walk through. Though some people remain so indecisive they're flummoxed and don't walk through any of them. That would be most people stuck on a treadmill up in the States. So that was two strikes for me, two failed businesses here in Latin America. But did I give up and go back to the States? Nope. Then in one of the crazier businesses I decided to invest in, I became silent partners with a beautiful Latina who had a good idea. She had this idea to set up what she called a bikini girl car wash. I was a silent partner. She did everything. She rented a defunct gas station on a busy corner on the Pan-American Highway. Great place, great location, safe, tons of traffic. She was a model, by the way, and hired a bunch of out-of-work Latina models to wear bikinis and wash cars and work the bar and restaurant, etc. Oh, and here's a tip about serving booze and beer in Latin America. Turns out if you get a permit to sell food as a restaurant or even have a kind of a 7-Eleven corner market, you don't even need a liquor license. At least that's how it is when you're off the tourist trail. When you're on the gringo trail, the local government's always more strict about that stuff. Plus, you know, they want to soak the gringos for taxes as much as they can. Yep, that's what happens when the gringos pile in. Anyway, after about 2 or 3 months, the place was going like gangbusters. Then one day, the local cops came and shut the place down. Why? Because it was close to a fairly upscale neighborhood, and a school and a church and a kindergarten within a couple of blocks of the place. And as we found out, some of the old ladies living in the neighborhood had seen their own husband's cars parked at that car wash for a little too long and a little too often. Well, they petitioned the municipality and dug up an old law that said there couldn't be an establishment that served liquor or beer within 100 meters, that's about 2 blocks, of a kindergarten or grade school. And when the girl who ran the place went to court with a counter-argument, pointing out a half a dozen situations where there were places selling liquor and beer right next to grade schools and kindergartens in other parts of the city, well, no good. The judge wouldn't budge. He still wouldn't have it. Even though, and this is the kicker, he would often come and get his car washed there himself. So strike three for me. I lost my investment in that business. And who'd have thunk, for the craziest of reasons, huh? So bottom line, sexy sells as long as it's not in your wife's neighborhood. Now, I have to admit, when I first was approached by that beautiful young model, I had my doubts the place was ever going to take off. But I thought, hell, it certainly is going to be interesting and a lot of fun, and it was. So I didn't put a lot of money into it. Not enough, maybe $5,000, that if I lost it all, it would wreck my style of living. In fact, that's how I always look at investments here in Latin America. The first thing I ask myself is, if I lose all this dough, is it going to affect my lifestyle? That is to say, I never invest so much that if I lost it, I'd lose sleep over it, or worse, have to retreat back to the States with my tail between my legs. Just like Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, never invest more than you can afford to lose. But by all means, do invest. Now, it's obvious most gringos and expats looking to start a business will go to the touristy areas thinking, you know, let's market to clueless tourists and wealthy gringos. Like no one's ever thought of that before. Just remember, as mentioned, if you're on the gringo tourist trail, there'll be lots more government rules, regulations, and hoops to jump through. Lots more permits, even an inspection once in a blue moon. That is, if you have a brick-and-mortar business. And as for me, I've been down here a long, long time now. I'm of the opinion that I'd never really want to have a brick-and-mortar business in Latin America or anywhere in the world again. There's just too much money to be made with online businesses. And plus, there's almost zero overhead. You could do it from your living room in your underwear or in your home office or in a bathtub full of Red Bull and Cheese Whiz. Like, for example, one of my buddies who has a very successful online software business. Well, oddly enough, all the keyboards at his business are permanently stained the color orange. Not sun-kissed orange, Cheeto orange. Or, as Latinos like to call them, Chetos. Speaking of business failures, the funny thing is, I'd say about 9 out of 10 gringo businesses start out as hobbies, things gringos and expats like to do. You know, lots of time on your hands. You can pursue some of the dreams you never had time, space, or money for when back on that treadmill. Even tree-hugging gringos with esoteric artsy dreams often stumble into success. Like, for example, I know two gringos in two different Latin countries doing pretty well enough to support themselves in a first-world style anyway, just making their own handmade soaps and scented candles, if you can believe that. Shades of patchouli oil, huh? Hey, you boomers, remember that stuff? Was kind of a 60s and 70s poor man's Chanel No. 5. And one of those girls, yes, the woman, she makes all kinds of money and doesn't even have a shop. She just goes to Gringoized tourist spots and makes deals to place her candles, incense, and stuff in existing stores and boutiques on consignment. And she provides a nice little rainforest hardwood display rack. Then there's this other guy I know, an artist, who makes mini figurines and funky little items out of, get this, silver spoons and forks. Heats them up, bends them, whatever he does, and turns them into mini chairs, sofas, and tables, figurines. They really are little works of art, and he's got them consigned out to boutique clothing stores and jewelry shops in mostly gringoized areas and high-end Latino shopping malls off the tourist trail. Now, he's no Uri Geller, but he does make a nice living. So I figure a good 9 out of 10 businesses started by gringos evolved from tiny little one-man or one-person operations as a kind of a hobby. And I can't tell you how many of those never really made it or failed. Because a lot of those people didn't start out to have any kind of big money-making operation. It just was something they wanted to do. But I can tell you this, and you probably figured it out already. The gringo businesses that do tend to fall apart or go bust are the ones where one of the partners isn't pulling his weight, doesn't have any skin in the game, which is really important. A lesson I learned way too late myself, by the way. And often, as in my case, you have a business partner who simply rips you off or lies and misleads you. Another thing is, over the years, I've met a whole slew of gringos who've been in business or tried starting a business, only to find they've placed way too much trust in what some Latin guy, businessman, Latin neighbor, or lawyer has told them. Because, you know, down here in Latin America, everything's on mañana time and everything is no problemo. No problem, man. We can do it. And that's just not the way it is. And remember, here in Latin America, unlike the States, a handshake is not a deal. I hate to be so cynical as to say don't trust anybody. But in truth, you really shouldn't trust anyone, especially, as expat Eddie likes to say, if he speaks English. Although, as mentioned earlier, there are always exceptions, always. But I'll tell you one thing. If you're going to start a brick-and-mortar business, even if you're on the gringo tourist trail and everybody around you, including your clients, speak English, I personally, these days anyway, would never start a brick-and-mortar business if I didn't know some Spanish. Because if you don't, you're going to always depend on other people to translate for you. Not only is that a pain in the ass, but that person most likely won't have any skin in the game. Worse yet, will be in the perfect position to take advantage of you. And as it turns out, many gringas looking to start a business will hook up with a Latino boyfriend who will serve as the translator and more. And vice versa, if it's a lone gringo looking to start a business, he'll hook up with a Latina. And when that happens, and I've seen it happen a lot, especially in laid-back beach and surfer towns, let's just say most times it does not end up well. And another thing, if you don't speak Spanish and you end up off the gringo tourist trail. Now, remember, I was on the gringo tourist trail myself for about 2.5 to 3 years living in Costa Rica. So initially, I had a very soft landing and was stuck with gringos speaking English everywhere, including Latinos speaking English, who, by the way, I'm always a little suspicious of. Because for one, that means they either went to bilingual schools and are tainted children of the Latin rich. And believe me, you don't want to get involved with those folks. Especially not in business, because like their American soft-palmed counterparts, they usually suffer from over-coddling and will not pull their weight as business partners. And then you've got Latinos who will try to warm up to you. They speak English because they got deported, and you definitely don't want to go into business with one of those guys. I mean, look, they've already committed quite a few crimes to get back and forth across the border, so you're dealing with somebody who's not quite trustworthy from the get-go. though quite a few clueless gringos will hook up with these guys because they're not bilingual and they're starting a business and they need someone to do the translating. Big mistake, and that's happened to a couple of my very best gringo friends who, unfortunately, still don't speak Spanish. So that's why I'm often suspicious of Latinos and Latinas who speak pretty good English, whether they're on or off the gringo tourist trail. Not saying they're all bad people. It's just that if you partner up with them, you're taking a risk. But I have to admit, even for me, after being a couple of years in Costa Rica, I just couldn't learn Spanish. I said to myself, I have to get off the tourist trail. And I ended up for years in places where I wouldn't meet a single English-speaking person for days on end. And even when I did finally learn my Spanish, I had a real craving once in a while to be around people who got my jokes. You know, people you could hang with who could give just as good as they get and could fire one-liners and zingers back at you as well as you could at them. I mean, you know, that's part of sitting around and hanging with the boys or the girls, right? And really, gringos are the best at having that kind of fun. Because I'm being 100% honest with you here, I don't care if your Spanish is 99.9%. The camaraderie you have with the local Spanish speakers you're going to meet and hang with will not be on par, creatively speaking, with the gringos and expats you hang with on the tourist trail. Then again, the tourists and expats you meet on the tourist trail always seem to be a cut above on the IQ and social and cultural awareness scale than the gringos back home on the treadmill in Cleveland. Because travelers, at least international travelers, always seem to be culturally, socially, and intellectually a slight cut above the good old boys that hang in the sports bars back home. Hey, I could be wrong, but I bet I could write a book on it. But then again, you'll find a good share of distasteful gringos and gringas on the tourist trail, too. Many of them do-gooders, tree-huggers, backpackers, retired public school teachers, and pensioned-out government workers out to cure the wrongs of the world like they know how to do it. Oh, you'll find them down here, all right. You know, or maybe you don't know, the ones that crowd the sports bars on the gringo tourist trail, rooting for the Yankees and the Bulls and the Bucks. They're joiners, too. They love to start and join groups. Self-help clubs, Republicrats abroad, Sunday barbecues and cookouts, talking politics. Man, I'll tell you, when you're on the tourist trail, it'll take you about 2 seconds to locate a gringo self-help group loaded with Trump haters and Obama Clinton lovers. Now, in my mind, I don't care who you happen to love or hate in the political arena. I just think it's stupid, foolish, and counterproductive to bring that baggage down here when you move to Latin America. The truth is, the smartest, happiest, most content gringos and expats I know just don't concern themselves with that crap at all. They came down here to get off the treadmill. And bringing down that social justice warrior and political baggage with you, that means you've got one foot still firmly stuck on that treadmill. Though it's not your usual workaday treadmill, it's a different kind of treadmill. It's going on in your mind. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Hey, I'm not an expert on anything except my own opinion. But you knew that already, right? So in the end, do gringos fail in business here in Latin America? Of course they do. But I think if you follow just a few simple rules, it's very difficult to fail. One, try not to have a partner, especially a partner you're romantically involved with, unless, of course, you're married. Number two, don't believe half of what people are telling you. Be especially leery of Latinos who speak English who are giving you advice. Unless, of course, they're trained professionals like doctors, lawyers, architects, etc. Keep away from brick-and-mortar businesses if you can, especially hotels, restaurants, and the bar and entertainment business. Number four, if you've got competition, make sure it's Latino and not gringo. Because remember, you've got the gringo advantage and they don't. And finally, gringos will rip you off too. So will Canadians, eh? All right, speaking of speaking Spanish, I was on an airplane the other day. And you know, here in Latin America, they've got the in-flight magazines in English and in Spanish. So I came across this tiny article entitled, Learning a Foreign Language Can Stave Off Alzheimer's. It says in many studies of Alzheimer's patients in northern Italy, Germany, and Switzerland, people who spoke both German and Italian were, on average, admitted to Alzheimer's wards 5 years later than people who could only speak one language. And it says, as it turns out, people who were bilingual for any particular stage in the Alzheimer's progression had the same apparent 5-year delay. In other words, being natively bilingual slows the process of dementia 5 years. So it really is worth putting the effort in. But I'll caution you again, if you work, play, and or retire in Latin America on the gringo tourist trail, the chances are very good that you'll never learn to converse in Spanish enough to even talk on a basic level to your cleaning lady, much less watch a movie in Spanish, read a book, or even understand what people are talking about in the elevator. However, if you're living off the tourist trail, you pretty much have no choice, even if you resist, to pick it up. Because the people you meet and hang with aren't going to learn English just to talk to you. Though you'll always find some gringos living off the gringo tourist trail who seem to home in on other gringos and expats in the same boat. Which is why every small, medium, and large city well off the gringo tourist trail has its so-called gringo slash expat bar or bars. And they're almost always located in and around the business, hotel, and convention areas. Oh, and here's something that hits home. Talking about home, whether it's in the States or in Latin America. You know, lately, this buying your way into elite colleges has been all over the news up in the States, especially with these Hollywood people, right? Well, don't think it doesn't happen down here in Latin America, as you will see from this article that just came out in a Cuenca, Ecuador newspaper. Listen to this. It says, just last week, a document was sent to the rector of the University of Cuenca, the rector's name, Pablo Venegas. The document reports that the entrance exam to the School of Medicine and Dentistry in Cuenca were leaked and shared on WhatsApp and up for sale days before the exams were to be taken. Again with the WhatsApp, huh? Or as some prefer to call it, WhatsApp. Anyway, it says the third-year medical student who sent this data on WhatsApp and put the answers up for sale included in his sales package the answers to 6 complete exams. Those entrance exams were taken on May 31st of this year by 8,000 people aspiring to get into medical and dental school. Apparently, they caught this guy, and he's got a lawyer now. Turns out, some of those students paid up to $600 for advanced copies of these exams that were transferred over WhatsApp. Bottom line, Latin American universities, just like up in the States, have their own particular scandals. By the way, the other day I was talking to our own Captain Mango, and he was telling me about his former landlord. One of these entitled children of the rich who is now a grown adult and who should know better is actually in the business of selling fake university diplomas, offering fake degrees, titles, and all the paperwork for the most well-known degrees and careers. Which reminds me of an article in Spanish I read not so long ago. It stated that up to a third of the senators, representatives, congressmen, and diplomats, they're called diputados when they're in Congress, by the way. Diputado means deputy. Anyway, the article said that up to a third of the people sitting in Congress right now have false university degrees listed in their credentials. I know, a pustulant, maggotist thing to do, but if you're going to swim with the turds, you're going to get some poop on you. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.